Well, good evening, everyone. I declare the General Council meeting of the Mayor and Council open. For those who don't know, I'm Chris Hannah, I'm the Mayor. We're chairing the meeting. We begin by acknowledging the Kaurna people and the traditional owners of these lands, and we respect their elders past and present. I invite any of the elected members who foresee a potential conflict of interest to disclose that now. Councillor Telfer?
I have an actual conflict of interest with Westminster because I'm a neighbour.
Thank you. And Councillor Schilling?
I have a perceived conflict of interest with the Marion Moorwalkers with the community grants.
Yeah, I have a perceived conflict of interest with the golf club item. I know one gentleman on the board.
Okay. If there's nothing else, we'll just keep going. May I ask for someone to move confirmation of the minutes of the last General Council meeting? Move Councillor Telfer, seconded Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. In relation to the communications reports, we can move them all on block, but can I just point out, and I'm sorry I didn't mention this to staff earlier, but in the Chief Executive and Executive Communications Report on page 8, there's a meeting there with ministers, and I believe that should be shadow ministers. So perhaps that could be corrected when we move the motion. And on the following page, page 9, the very last item, Grant Meyer, I think it's M-E-Y-E-R, so if his name could be corrected, that would be great. But if moved or a question, Councillor Hull?
There was one matter there that you overlooked. Labour is actually L-A-B-O-R. You've probably forgotten it, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, I've got some sort of mental block about that for some reason.
Yeah.
Can't understand that. But could you just tell us where that was, Councillor Hull?
Oh, it's in there somewhere. Unless we're talking about Theresa May, I'm not sure. If I may, Mr. Mayor, in regards to the CEO's meeting with the ZEC, the South Australian Zone Emergency Management Committee?
Yes,
Southern Area maybe it is. Acronyms are always bobbing up.
Southern Adelaide Emergency Management Zone Committee.
You may well be able to take on board a email that I received from Councillor Gard in regards to not getting a response from the South Australian Country Fire Service in regards to his concerns about fire danger in the south of the city. I think that's the appropriate venue to probably answer Councillor Gard's question.
Is that something that you need management to comment on now?
Well, if the CEO and Councillor Gard have dialogue, maybe Mr. Skull or one of his representatives can raise it in that forum.
Councillor Hull, in relation to your query about the name of a political party, I'm struggling to see it. I don't want to suggest you're one to send us on a goose chase, but can't see it. Anyway, well, I suppose that can be moved with page 11. Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Fifth from the bottom. Ah, yes, L-A-B-O-R. Thanks indeed. So with those corrections, I'd like to move that the reports be accepted. Oh. Councillor Hull, Mr. Skull?
Through you, Your Worship, I'll follow that up with Councillor Gard and Mr. Lyons so that we get that dialogue there with the CFS.
Thank you. Someone to move those reports be accepted. Moved Councillor Telfer. Seconded Councillor Hutchinson. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, We had some discussion about a deputation in relation to the Marion Golf Club. Do we have people from the golf club with us now? We do. Is that Mr. Young? Very good. Now, I had suggested, because we have a packed agenda of some 500 and something pages, that it would be useful to have you come in later, but I've heard that you had a committee or general meeting tonight, so it would be most convenient for you to address us now. So would you like to come forward? We'll make a space for you at the front here. And members, this relates to a motion brought by Councillor Crossland in relation to funding of improvements at the golf club. One of a number of unfortunate cases where we've applied for state funding and it hasn't been forthcoming, so we now need to reconsider one form or another. So in relation to the golf club, and to, I suppose, to tell us about the desirability of the improvements and also the funding proposition, Mr. Young, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to give you a bit of background, Marion Park Golf Club is a not-for-profit club and was established back in 1980 by a number of local residents and players at the course. The club rooms were demolished by council sometime between 2004 and 2005, at which time it was agreed that the club would relocate to a temporary transportable building at the site, which was provided by the City of Marion until funding for a new club room and car park upgrade could be found. The old club rooms were always well utilised by both members and the general public for various events and small functions. The club held a limited liquor licence to accommodate approximately 200 people within the premises. At the time, the club membership size was in the region of 175 members, which include women, men and approximately 5 junior members at the time. The new temporary building had electricity, but no other services installed, forcing the club to use toilet facilities in the adjacent pro shop and kiosk, which is about 30 to 40 metres away. The club's liquor licence had to be restricted to only 50 persons due to the size of the transportable building. Unfortunately, this eliminated the club's ability to hold any events and significantly impacted the club's income. As a direct result of the lack of appropriate club facilities, the club effectively lost its identity and membership decreased significantly from 175 to approximately 45 at its lowest to numbers now of approximately 60, which includes one junior member. Having an up-to-date and suitable pro shop and club facilities at the Marion Golf Park will not only improve the outlook of the location for passers-by, but it will give the course management and club alike the ability to offer quality facilities and, in turn, a professional service to the local and surrounding residents, users of the course and club members alike. The committee are keen to re-establish the club and hope that, to achieve pre-club room demolition membership figures. During the past 13 to 14 years, the club has patiently and quietly liaised with council and continued to wait for its new club rooms. The club's committee watched over as other major projects were completed and believed that it would be our turn someday soon. On a number of occasions, we have been proactive and applied for external grant fundings without any success. In the last 18 months or so, the club was very excited to be contacted by council staff to advise that they would support an upgrade of the pro shop and it would include a club room extension to the existing building. Unfortunately, external grant funding continued to hold up the project. Until recently, the club had paid a modest rent to council and maintained the building's internals. After the City of Marion changed its leasing policy, the club then retained the said rental and put that towards a future building fund. We don't expect anything to be free. Our members have offered $35,000, or in the region of $35,000, towards this project. The amount has been matched by Blair Turf Management, being the course management, who manage the site and pro shop. We are grateful for the funds the council has already committed to the project, and we now ask that council honours the previous undertaking and increases council's funding to deliver the project finally. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a bit of time left in that 5-minute allocation. Leaves us some time for questions. Councillor Hull.
How much do you pay per annum now to the Marion Council?
Up until recently, we were paying in the region about $3,000. And then in recent years that was adjusted to a percentage of our profit, which our profit was next to nothing, to be honest. So that's effectively what we've been paying just to be at the site.
Now, there's a $100 membership fee, I believe. It's
$110 now, yes.
$110.
Okay. With no GST.
So the question I have for you is that our citizens have got to pay $110 to use a Marion Council golf course, and yet there's a proposal here that the ratepayers have to pay $330,000 as well as pay a membership.
The membership is separate to the golf course. The membership is to cover affiliation fees of members, golf course and golf club members. So that $110 actually equates to $97, goes back to affiliation fees and everything else, and the club makes about $13.
Right. So what I'm getting at, so if you didn't pay $110, you could wander out and play golf?
No, the club is separate to the course. The course is managed by Blair Turf Management, and they charge green fees for the course.
The right, so there's separate green fees?
To play on the golf course, correct.
All right, okay.
Any other questions from local members? Councillor Clancy.
Clarify, it's actually a public course.
100% public, yes. Pardon me?
On your golf course, you have to pay, is that right?
You have to pay green fees to the course management, left head management to play golf at the course, yes.
Councillor Gillespie?
Insurance and things like
that? For Blair Turf Management, that's correct. The golf club, again, which is separate, run by volunteers, has no paid employees whatsoever. As part of the affiliation fees, there are some insurances for the members of the golf club, separate to the patrons of the golf course.
And if you got this, what do you envisage the membership to go to?
We envisage the engagement of the public will then identify that rather than them being an ATCO hut sitting there, which people don't know what it is, even though we've got signage on it, limited signage, that 7 day a week people will actually want to join our club and want to play golf and be members at the golf course and enjoy the benefits of both playing golf, fitness, etc., as well as being a member of our small club. But we expect the membership, or hope the membership, at least double or triple. That's the expectation, bare minimum.
Righto. Thank you for that, Mr. Young. Now, I'm recommending to members that we leave the item where it is in the agenda, simply because we have a lot of time-sensitive material to get through this evening. So it was a useful presentation, but we have to get through a lot of essential stuff. So sometimes we'll move things forward, but I suggest it's probably not a good idea tonight, but we'll get through as much as we can. And Mr. Young, we understand you're going to a meeting and you'll be advised, I'm sure, of the outcome of tonight's deliberations. Thank you. All right, we have another deputation, this time from the Bicycle Institute of South Australia, and Katie Gilfillan is here to present to us, and this is in relation to the walking and cycling guidelines that have come back to Council's considerations in the agenda tonight. So welcome, Katie.
Thank you, Mayor. Hi, I'm Katie. I'm here from the Bicycle Institute. We represent a community of everyday bike riders who choose to ride because they think it's the best way to transport themselves to school, to work. Our members include many families and children and people of all ages. We have members in your local area, and I speak for them, as well as your local bicycle user group. I'd like to encourage you to adopt the walking and cycling guidelines before you. I ask you to not only accept them, but to fund them and implement them over the years. The document that you have been presented covers extremely well why we want to encourage active transport. I'm sure you're all aware of the huge benefits to individual, community and environmental health that eventuate when more people are walking and cycling, so I won't cover that now. I will talk about demand and I will talk about quality infrastructure. Firstly, demand and the transport system. The existing transport model in Marion prioritises cars, including through your budgets, road space, parking areas, parking fees, speed limits and intersection priorities. your roads by design, like many in Greater Adelaide, tell people to drive, so people do. People can confuse this as a demand issue, but it is more about supply. What network are you supplying to your ratepayers? What we do know is there is great demand for people wanting to walk and ride, but road design and road speeds make them feel uncomfortable. And this inhibits participation. This isn't surprising. If we sit back now and visualise streets in Marion, we can see that in the majority, bike infrastructure is missing or of poor quality. Yes, some people are happy with a painted line between them and a car travelling at 60 kilometres an hour, but most aren't, and it is the most that you want to encourage to walk and ride. And yes, you've created some great bikeways, including the Merino Rocks and the Sturt River, but they do not form a connected network to help people travel throughout Marion. 60% of people are interested in riding, but concerned about safety. We also know 67% of students in Adelaide are driven to school, but 75% would like to walk or ride. Kids love being out and about having fun on bikes, but at the moment there's just nowhere for them to go. To summarise, the current network encourages driving through supply and inhibits demand for other transport modes. So what is needed to change this? Develop a quality walking and cycling network. Your guidelines present a step up in the quality of infrastructure provided to bike riders, and it is exactly this that we know works. It keeps existing riders safe and encourages them to ride more, as well as encouraging new people to ride. A safe bike network should suit anyone aged 8 to 80 years. Yes, we would love to see an 8-year-old able to navigate by bike alone to school in your council area. Yes, it will require separation from traffic where speeds are high and volumes of traffic are high, and otherwise it will mean your local streets becoming more people friendly. It will involve thinking about walking and cycling every time you think about transport. By filling in around your already great bikeways using your guidelines, you will see more people using these existing assets, and bike use in Marion will increase. Yes, at times it's going to be hard. Because supply has favoured drivers, they can get upset when some space is taken away. In fact, they will often stomp their feet and say it isn't fair. But is it fair to listen to them and leave walkers and riders without a safe network? Or perhaps putting lives in danger? Or should those in leadership educate, inform and inspire the community to come along? What we know is when environments are made better for active transport, the community likes it, even if they stamp their feet in the first place. Who doesn't like quieter, less polluted streets with lots of people out and about enjoying themselves? We also know it's great for business. When we're in the riding community, we are here to support positive change and be a vocal voice for this change. To finish, it's important to break the myth that bike riders don't pay their way. For every $1 invested in cycling infrastructure, there is up to an $11 return in benefits to your community. At this time, in this place, we simply can't afford to not invest in quality active transport infrastructure. On behalf of everyday riders and those that want to ride but don't feel safe, including many children, I ask that you accept your guidelines and work to implement them. Lastly, regarding the Tonsley Greenway route recommendation, we ask you not to accept the recommendation before you. I've been contacted today by local riders and they have significant safety concerns, and in recent discussions we do not believe that the better options have been fully explored, and we would like you to give us time to explore those further with council and get the best outcome for your budget. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Just on the 5 minutes, I think I should allow some questions. If you want to just stay there for a moment, Kate. I've got a few questions, I must admit. But Councillor Gillespie, you go first.
Thank you, Your Worship. My question, thank you, very well presented.
Thank you.
The separation of pedestrians and cyclists. Around Brisbane, along the river, you actually have one track for cyclists both ways and one track for walkers. There is a reluctance to adopt that here, but the complaints I get from walkers is that they don't hear the cyclists coming in behind them when you've got the shared lanes. I just wanted to know your views on that.
Yeah, we would absolutely advocate where pedestrian volumes are high that it's not appropriate to share infrastructure, and pedestrians deserve to feel comfortable walking along, like bike riders want to be comfortable on the road. So we'd recommend definitely things like coastal paths where it's a particularly high pedestrian volume, it is best to separate.
Councillor Hull. Oh, Councillor Pfeiffer was actually first. I'll come back to Councillor Hull.
Thank you, Your Worship. And through you, look, thank you for your presentation tonight. My question, and I foreshadowed some members this afternoon that I'd like to move a deferral later on of the motion in regard to the Thomas Lee Greenway for the very same reasons that you raised. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but are there any other better ideas that you have in your back pocket ready to go that we could potentially consider? I mean, we won't, if that deferral is successful, we won't be considering it until at least the end of January, but is there anything else, any alternatives, considering we have exhausted a few now, that you consider worthy of looking at?
The only other option that was brought to me today from a local rider was to look at what cost it would be for the small section from the, I think it's Celtic Avenue, to connect on the western side to Bruce Street. So it would be a small section of railway corridor. There may not be room, but we don't know. And when I asked, staff hadn't investigated whether it would be possible to do a separated bikeway on the railway corridor for that small section to then get riders onto the western side where the traffic volumes on local roads are much better. And I believe another option has been to investigate with the schools on the eastern side about putting it next to them. And I also think council should be considering acquiring the land from the school, Hamilton School, that refused to allow bicycle access. I presume there's a precedent for acquiring land for public access.
Councillor Hull.
Firstly, a very quick comment about Tonsley. The members of the previous council would remember quite well that we almost begged and pleaded to dictate when they actually electrified the railway line that they would not put infrastructure in the way. I mean, like these big electrical boxes that would prevent us putting in an appropriate bikeway. And we got the impression that everything was hunky-dory, that they would do that. And guess what? They didn't play ball at all. They put that stuff almost strategically in the way of us having an appropriate bikeway through there, and they really should be condemned for it. So I think it's important for you to know that we did make our best efforts with Tonsley to get the best outcome.
I am aware. I did listen to your last council meetings and I did hear that that was a concern, and I think that is frustrating. I also think that the state government should be helping to finance the project if they have put in infrastructure that's in the way. I don't think $3 million for that bikeway through there is actually a big investment when they've got billions of dollars going into major roads just up the road.
Councillor, did you actually have a question? Or?
I'm eager to ask somebody from your status and your group about this. This is the signs all around South Australia relating to bikeways times on dip-tie roads. Essentially, 7 to 9 a.m. caters for school kids to get to school. But what about 4 to 7 when school finishes about 3:15?
It's a very good question. And DIPTI has been going about changing those operating times from in some areas to start at 3. Is that what you're meaning, that it should be earlier? Yeah. I would also say, though, just that infrastructure is not really very appropriate for school children. A high traffic area, high traffic speeds, and no separation from traffic. It's not to say that longer operating hours aren't better for bike riders, definitely agree, because it's not a bike lane for most of the day, basically. It's a parking area. So, yes, I would definitely agree that longer operating hours is better. We would want full-time bike lane.
I agree that it's not the best-case scenario.
It's not a debating time, but if you have a question, Councillor Hull, you're done for now? Okay, great. It might be timely to welcome from Department of Transport Mr. Watt and Ms. Kukuru. They're here about a different item on the agenda, but this might be most informative for them, and they might be able to speak to their colleagues about some of these issues. Now, Mr. Councillor Gard, you're next.
Yes, thanks, Ms. Gilfillan, for your address. It was very informative, and I'm certainly a sympathiser with it. Of course, practicalities are the obvious issue, and you would be aware of that, and indeed the Institute. But I'm interested to know if, from your knowledge, there is a worthy model that might be pursued, preferably in our region of the world, that comes to mind, because obviously it's not just how and when and how much, it's also the case for it and the outcomes that have been experienced in other models if they exist.
There is a lot happening in the world at the moment in cycling. There's a global cycling boom. In terms of our local area, local councils that are attempting to make good efforts, Port Adelaide, Enfield and City of Chelmsford are making attempts. In Australia, local council, the City of Yarra has done an excellent job in terms of building up local bike infrastructure. And then on a bigger scale, the City of Sydney's just released a huge network of separated bikeways, and they're pushing ahead with that. They originally had big reluctance from people, and now everyone's on board saying we want more. Auckland and New Zealand are doing amazing work in terms of business case for infrastructure, and once it's built, they are now seeing huge gains in terms of people using it. And then worldwide, London is going about massive changes. I just hope that Adelaide can recognise the importance of walking and cycling before we get to the traffic chaos of London. So we seem to be going that way, and it seems that cities only change once it's completely gridlocked, which is where we're leading to. And now London is doing everything to prioritise walking and cycling. So there's definitely plenty of evidence and plenty of global examples, and I can send some through you, different links and information. Melbourne's in the process of going about huge change as well.
Yep. All right, I think I can turn to... I've just got three questions, Ms. Gilfillan. One is, who alerted you to the opportunity to give a deputation this evening to the meeting?
I was alerted by a councillor.
Ah, very good. And secondly, something I initiated...
And just to follow up, the reason I was alerted by the councillor was because when the guidelines weren't accepted at the last meeting, I was following up because I had big concerns about that and some of the conversations at that meeting, and so I made it very aware that I was very interested in progress, and we had also spoken to staff about those guidelines as well.
Very good. You'll be glad to know they've been improved, but my next question was about about 3 years ago I initiated the idea of an allocated $200,000 a year to go into a fund for basically cycling infrastructure. Are you saying that's not enough?
Well, one, there's inflation, but two, I don't know what your complete road budget is, and I don't know what percentage of your road budget that contains, but I would say $200,000, if you're considering about a serious bike network, would not be significant enough. But I'd have to look at your figures. I don't know how much, if you know what your annual spend is on transport, because I guess there's a big investment in roads.
Well, perhaps I could ask you, how does it compare to other councils? Are you aware?
I know that, no.
Okay. No worries.
But in saying that, one of the things that I would recommend in terms of councils is that the State Bike Fund was recently cut, which is a state government fund that your council can apply for 50% co-funding.
Yes, we do.
And it was recently cut to around $300,000 for 68 councils to share from DIPTI funding, and that's an abomination. And the local councils should be getting together and saying this just isn't good enough, because the state government should be supporting you, because you're taking car traffic off of arterial roads, and that helps them.
I think that might have to cut short there. third question, a big part of these guidelines is public art. So how essential is that to you for your cycling endeavours?
I think public art's great. I don't know, anything that makes my ride entertaining and engaging, and I think that, you know, it's part of the picture.
Okay, thanks very much. We'll come to that item later in the agenda.
Thank you for your time.
Now we move on to committee recommendations, starting on page 16. And I do have one question about that. One of the recommendations in relation to the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee was that the Mayor write to DIPTI about upgrading Majors Road. Which manager is going to make sure that I do that? Or which staff member?
Through the Chair, that will come from my department.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that's covered. Possibly these committee... Unless people have other questions, we could deal with the non-confidential minutes on block, so that's the Infrastructure and Strategy, Urban Planning and Review and Selection Committee minutes of the 4th of December. If somebody would like to so move, Councillor Hutchinson, seconded Councillor Telfer. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously, thank you. So now we do have a number of confidential items, and I do mean a number of confidential items. So regrettably, I'll need to ask people to clear the gallery, apart from a few named staff members, if indeed we get approval for the confidential motion, not on page, well, I don't know, things have changed because in relation to Westfield, it's not confidential. We could come back and that's really the next item, isn't it? Okay, now we'll clear everyone out. I think we deal with Westfield after we've come out of confidence. So should I be looking at page 3? Or are all of the cover pages after, they're actually after, not before, the confidential items? Is that right?
No,
it's
before.
No? Okay, so sorry, there's another group of motions about the minutes and reports.
Yes.
Okay, they come later. So, in relation to skipping through Westfield, so the confidential minutes of the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee meeting. I haven't got page numbers for these members, but hopefully you can find that. Everyone found that space? Would someone like to think about it? Oh, well, there's nothing. I thought there was nothing from Urban Planning that's confidential. But the West was not confidential.
Oh, okay. So we don't need to retain that anymore? Those minutes in confidence?
No.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, that doesn't form a substantial motion later on, does it? So if people want to comment on that, we need to have that discussion in the open. That's what I was saying, that if we do that after the confidential items, we can come back to that when we're in open session. We're not in confidence at the moment. Just take that as a procedural question, but we're not. That's why I've got my microphone on. We're just figuring out what we're doing first. That's true. I mean, you can open the doors of this discussion if you want, but they can hear what we're saying anyway, I think. So we're dealing with the confidential minutes of the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee meeting. Let's deal with that. There's a motion to go into confidence there. If someone would like to move it, Councillor Hutchinson, so moved. So I've got to move it, but I've got a question. I'll take the question. Just to caution you, Councillor Hull, we're not in confidence at the moment, but your question's about the confidential motion, I take it. Yes, so go ahead. I'll ask staff to answer that. Well, is there anyone of the managers here who would like to answer that or not? Or do we get someone else in?
Through the chair, I just need some time just to scan. There's nothing sensitive. The report and the item at the INS committee was considered in confidence because we were discussing the Aboriginal cultural heritage aspect of the project, which is confidential. But I'll just check, bear with me, I just want to check that there's nothing that would be contentious if we released publicly.
While that's being checked, Councillor Crossland, with a comment?
Yeah, Your Worship, from my point of view, there is a map in the report which actually pinpoints Aboriginal heritage artefacts, which I believe by law you're not allowed to publicly display, something that has to be confidential.
But aren't we talking about the minutes?
But I think it's in there. It's in the report, isn't it? It's not attached to the minutes.
So, Ms. Zub, the question is, if there is no detail of the Aboriginal heritage in the report, why the suggested confidentiality? No, there's not an order on it, Councillor Hull. I don't think you're right about that. I think you're confusing the terminology, and that's not helpful to council. But I agree that it's a sensitive area. Now, I suppose one thing that bothers me is that the the grounds for confidentiality are commercial in confidence, aren't they, rather than any Aboriginal heritage issues. And yet when I look at the minutes, there's nothing of commercially sensitive nature there.
Through the chair, there is an error there. I think the intent was thinking it needed to be confidential due to the cultural heritage, but we've clarified that isn't in the minutes, so it would be fine to release. And I think the confidential order that was retained in here was from a previous BMX report, which was talking about costs, so we apologise, that's an error. The other matter that we would just bring members' attention to is we would... The decision to look at Majors Road hasn't been communicated back to the clubs at this stage. They're under the impression we're also still considering Darlington, so we'd want to communicate that to them as key stakeholders.
So why wouldn't have that been communicated?
At this point in...
So really what you're saying is it's confidential because stakeholders haven't been advised of the committee outcome? I must make a correction there. It is up to council, but it's up to administration to give us accurate advice as to whether there might be any grounds for confidentiality. And what we've got is a report that explains it should be confidential without justification. And even the fact that stakeholders haven't been advised of a potential council direction as suggested by a committee is not a reason under the Local Government Act for it to remain confidential. Ms. McKenzie, what do you say to that?
Through the chair, yes, the stakeholder engagement is not one of the sections that can be applied to keep it incompetent.
So I think you might be right, Councillor Hull. And in any case, the recommended motion doesn't give us a justification to go into confidence. So that might be another one. Can we just defer that? And because I want to actually deal with the confidential items and then get people back into the room. Are members happy with that? Okay. So the next one we've got is the service review, Community Safety Inspectorate. Let's have a look at that motion. Personnel matters. Is that... Now, by the way, is that meant to be personal matters at the end of that recommended motion? I mean, the extract from the Local Government Act, isn't it about personal affairs rather than... I can't remember it all, but is there something called personnel matters or is it meant to be personal affairs, namely that of the staff? Ms. Thwaites? Well... Well, that's right. I thought that what we should have here is some reference to the actual legislation. I realise we've got the section numbers, that's true, but it helps us decide if we've actually got the ordinary language description of the justification for secrecy. I hope members are with me on that. But I do accept that if we're talking about staff matters, then generally it will, you know, will fit that description of personal affairs in the legislation. So, would someone like to move that motion for us to go in for confidence as recommended? Councillor Telfer. And seconded, Councillor Hutchinson. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. So now we do have only some named people in the room. Mr. Zalanti's in. Ms. Perrin's away. Mr. Manuel's not here. So it's just us. What about... Oh, yeah. Right. So just letting everyone know, we're resuming an open session. So first, members, it's a bit confusing with the unnumbered pages, but we're looking at the remaining minutes of the Urban Planning Committee meetings. They deal particularly with Westfield. Now, bear in mind, I'm going to come back in a short time to a full-scale report on the Westfield expansion. So, for those in the gallery, it's pretty well breaking news that Westfield have announced the major expansion. So, and it's only today, I think, that they've come out about that. So what was going to be confidential, we can actually discuss publicly. So first I have to go to the minutes of the Urban Planning Committee that we haven't dealt with. They are pretty brief, but just cover the discussion that took place at the committee. I was just after someone to move that the, what's the usual motion for minutes, that they be accepted? Oh, that the minutes be endorsed, I suppose. Moved, Councillor Pryor. Did you wish to speak to that?
Yeah, just a quick note to say that because of the timeliness of this item, those notes haven't been back through the committee yet. It's just a note.
Okay. Is the motion to endorse the minutes, the remaining minutes of the committee seconded? Councillor Telfer, do you wish to speak? Any other speakers? Then all those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now, just to sort of keep things in order, we're still dealing with committee minutes, and this time with the remaining Infrastructure and Strategy Committee minutes, and this particularly relates to the BMX project. Again, I see there it is actually on the page. The recommended motion is that we receive and note that the, not the confidential minutes, but the, I suppose, the remaining minutes. Would that be better terminology? Of the Infrastructure Strategy Committee, 4th of December. So that's moved. Councillor Hutchinson, did you wish to speak? Is that seconded? Councillor Schling, wish to speak? No. Anyone against, or comments, questions? Councillor Gard?
Mention of Majors Road as the site, I think we need to clarify by saying originally selected site, because we were talking about others, just to be specific.
Well, the minutes are what they are, but your contribution in the debate has clarified that. And I'm sure that staff or councillors, when they talk to the BMX club, will be able to clarify that. Very well. Anyone else? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we move forward to the Westfield Shopping Centre item on the agenda. As I say, it was going to be confidential, but we're not bound by that in the same way now that Westfield has come out with it. There's quite a bit of information in the report, and there's likely to be immense community interest in it too. Obviously one of the prime concerns that was expressed in the committee was the cutting back of car parking spaces, and Centre Group, who are essentially the managers of Westfield Marion, assured the committee that they had various measures anticipated which would actually make it easier for parking in many respects. But councillors, you do need to note that this is our opportunity to make some points which we can forward to the State Commission Assessment Panel. If there are any concerns we want to raise on behalf of the community, and I think we have, what, a few days to raise that? Ms Dixon?
Apologies. Through the Chair, so the notification period will finish on the 7th of January.
I see. So we do have a short time, certainly the last council meeting, to endorse any comments. So I think what, because the motion actually invites council to make some additional comments to provide direction, I suggest that we suspend standing orders to have a quick discussion, and then we can fill in the gaps of the motion, which can then be put. Anyone, Councillor Valescu, to suspend standing orders? Seconded, Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. So I think we'll just go around the room to see what concerns people have, just very quickly. It's not part of the debate. It's not meant to be the main speech or whatever. Just to raise and dot points, any concerns that need to be addressed, or indeed any information gathering from staff. So I'll just go left to right. Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Worship. Obviously parking, that's pretty clear. The fact that we're having a major $250 million redevelopment and a reduction in car parking, I think, is astonishing, and I'm sure that other members agree. Look, the only other thing is probably more so with the process as opposed to the proposal itself. I mean, we have our public consultation people here in the gallery this evening, and we actively avoid consulting over Christmas. The fact that this is consultation right smack bang over Christmas, For a massive, massive, you know, quarter of a $1 billion redevelopment is astonishing. And
yes, extraordinary coincidence. Councillor Masika?
Your Worship, Mayor Hannah, my concern is the same as what Councillor Pfeiffer has raised, because on the night there was the issue of parking, which is going to be reduced by 200 spots. And this is going to impact, because people will be parking to the neighbourhood, and it will create a lot of hassles to the neighbours. And the other things which is I want to reinforce is the timing of the consultation, because if it's going to be the time where everyone is busy like Christmas, it's going to interfere with other people's time. So the timing needs to be crucial.
Thank you. Councillor Valescu?
I wanted to know the increase in the number of patrons they expect. Was that question asked at all? And what is that?
Through the Chair, we did put that question to Centre Group. They were prepared to provide the current annual visitation, which is estimated at 14 million visitors per year, but forecasting on, and I read from their response, forecasting on increased annual sales turnover has been undertaken post-development, but is commercial in confidence.
I suspect, by the way, that's 14 million visits rather than different visitors. But it is very popular with people from interstate as well. Councillor Lescu?
So my concern is, we just wanted to know, if they want to increase the number of people going there, we need to know what impact they will have on their infrastructure leading into that area. So I think even if they can trust us to tell us in confidence, that would be greatly appreciated. Also, wanting to know about the cut-through on Warrakowie Way, whether that's going to be impacted. Understand possibly with the cameras, if there isn't a boom gate going in, it may not be as much of an issue, but I want to know that. I think if they...
Sorry, can we just take that as your second question?
Yes.
Does staff have an answer for that one?
So basically,
impact on Warrakowie Way, and in particular, I suppose, where a boom gate might be with the so-called controlled parking on that side near the Marion Cultural Centre.
Through the chair, so at the moment the plans are leaving that as an entrance point, but I think the discussion that we had at the Urban Planning Committee would be they would be open to discuss that with council and look at different options as well.
Do we actually have the the committee was told that the entrance exit points would be the same for the centre in terms of the major roads, but clearly there's some council-owned property around the Marion Cultural Centre, so I don't know, did we ever get a really specific identification of where boom gates would be on that side of the property, of the Westfield property?
They are marked on the development application plan, so they've included that as an existing exit entrance. The Mayor is correct that the main entrance points are off Morfolk Road and also diagonal.
Councillor Lester, you've got one more question?
My question was the impact on stay-in service businesses. So there are businesses where you actually have to sit around for a while to get either the food or the beauty treatment, whatever it may be, haircut. And I'm just wondering what concessions there'll be for those people. Or is that not a question to ask?
It's a fair question. A lot of people, you know, talk about the idea of a movie plus a meal that might be more than 3 hours. So what's the answer to that?
Through the chair, discussions with the centre group is that they would be proposing to have the first, I think it's 3 hours, for free parking, and then fees would come after that, so that assists those
Yeah, look, if you see a movie, you can usually skip the first 10 minutes. It's just the shorts, you know. Councillor Clancy.
You'll have to be paying to go through their particular excessive ways.
And one of the things to get used to is pressing that little button on the microphone.
Okay.
So we can activate it from here, but easier if you do it yourself. But thanks for that.
If there's any provisions made for small businesses within Marion Shopping Centre that might be affected by reduced patronage during the build.
Anything we can say about that, Ms Dixon?
Through the chair, sorry, I can't comment on that.
All right. Councillor Pryor?
One of the things that I was keen to see and I haven't seen yet is the walking strategy for the external parts of the whole development. Where do they expect people to come in and where do they expect people to go out? And coupled with that is a desire, which my co-counsel has already mentioned tonight, to design this place so that they retain the trolleys on the premises. So you just can't take them out. It's not rocket science, to say my favourite saying. The other thing is Warrakowie Way, for me, is completely up for discussion. Completely. If you look at the map on page 8, the green line, or the lime green line that runs down the centre is the boulevard, as they call it. It drops people exactly where we would like them to be if we're looking at activating through the Marion Cultural Centre Plaza and onward to the Oaklands station. This is really good for us, and I think that we probably need to have a bit more of a discussion about how we deal with that and what happens at Warrakowie Way in the context of the Oaklands crossing, in the context of getting people foot movement through that area. This is really good for us. I think this this plan looks probably better than I expected it to look from that aspect. But definitely the trolleys, parking concerns everyone, obviously, and definitely the trolleys is the big one for us.
With respect, I think we'll find that the State Commission Assessment Panel is not going to be concerned about trolleys as a planning issue, in all seriousness. And that's the purpose of tonight, technically, but I am allowing some latitude because it's a very major development and I understand people want to make a very a wide range of comments.
That's true, but if we don't ask, we don't get.
Sure. Councillor Hull.
I'd like to echo what's already been said. The timing of this, we as a council wouldn't propose something like this to our community at this time of the year when our minds are on other things. I don't think it's an accident. I think it's really shown a lack of goodwill and poor corporate citizenship towards our community by trying this on at this time of the year. It's very disappointing. In terms of the car parking, well, it's already been mentioned that it's just astonishing that we'd look at a reduction. There's already been a loss of car parks over there, Mr. Mayor, with the car wash station. There's about 30 car parks went like that. And right now, the place is under the pump for the next few weeks. And Councillor Masika has made the point that our residents, my residents, it's my ward, deserve some respite, some understanding, a little bit of empathy from an international entity in regards to this. Now, in terms of the shopping trolleys, Councillor Pryor makes a good point, that if we don't actually put this in as part of our submission, Westfield don't even get the opportunity to react to it, because there is the opportunity for the planning bodies to actually engage with the applicant to see whether they've taken it on board. Now, we know that from our experiences with Castle Plaza, that the Corolla Park facility on Anzac Highway has indeed that locking device. And Glenn Hansen from there sent me details from it, which won't load up, unfortunately, some time ago. And we realised then it was the opportunity to actually try and embed that thinking now at the planning stage, when there's a review of the planning arrangements, where we can actually try and put that in place to create a harmonious relationship between the residents and the commercial precinct. So I hope that somebody's writing that down as part of our submission. If I can get this laid up, I can give you the details of what that technology is called to put in the submission. But apart from that, Mr. Mayor, I welcome the Westfield application and development application. I welcome the investment. I welcome the amenity for my family, your family and everybody else. But all I ask of Westfield to do is try and play ball. I actually said that to them, as you know, Mr. Mayor, when they were here. Let's actually play ball more. Let's talk in a collaborative way. But unfortunately, their behaviour doesn't match their rhetoric.
Well, with respect to the trolleys, of course, our other option is to communicate directly with them with this opportunity. But have we got a comment from staff in relation to the trolley issue?
Through the chair, I mean, I don't think it would harm to raise that in the letter, the response. But as the mayor raised before, SCAP will consider the planning aspects of. They'll be assessing it on, alignment to the planning criteria. So it won't be a consideration, but it's an avenue for council to raise that issue.
Right. Thanks. And look, as we go along, can staff come up? We have got some suitable wording going up on the screen there, incorporating these comments on the understanding that they'll be shaped to be put into planning language as much as possible, I presume. Councillor Telfer.
My concerns are that the main facade, main entranceway is right in the middle, so it's car-oriented. rather than connectivity with the community nearby by walking, cycling or any other means. It puts paid to the transport bus routes that we considered at some stages with the larger rebuilding, that there would be transport options to the north of the site. They're obviously gone now. I'm also concerned about quality facade to Diagonal Road as being extraordinarily important. I'm also concerned that we don't end up with a huge shopping centre that could be of character anywhere in the world. Anything that informs the local story, the local character, the local fabric is really important.
Thanks, Councillor Hutchinson.
Nothing new to add. Thank you.
Councillor Schilling.
Your Worship, the only concern that I have that was mentioned in the committee is regarding staff parking. I know they indicated that they will look at a reduced cost for staff, but there's nothing clear on the plans of that designated staff area, and they're a big key. If you don't have staff, you don't have shops. So what will be implicated to the staff of Westfield Marion?
That's right. So there was, in the context of the controlled parking, we were told that staff would have a relatively cheaper option to be able to park all day and presumably away from the main building to some extent. Have we been given an area or any more details about that?
No, not any further details. We can certainly seek that, Council.
All right, thank you. Councillor Duncan.
Your Worship, mine concerns are very similar to everybody else, and I know the traffic going off the Diagonal Road would be a concern, especially not only for the parking within the Westfield Centre, but also for the neighbours and the other side of the road. I think a lot of these have been mentioned when we were discussing it at the meeting, but nothing clear has been said, so it would be nice to have more information.
Thank you. Councillor Gard.
Your Worship, yes, I have a small list here. Firstly, I'm not all that convinced about the comparisons that were made at the presentation the other night in regard to other such shopping centres. Westfield is, our Westfield is, sorry? Exactly. Our Westfield is very remote to any other comparable shopping centre for a start. But I would not be sure that there's been a heck of a lot of science applied there in the case for saying less cars. That's what they were talking about in that context. So that needs a lot of homework. But extending on the subject of car parking space, I didn't hear much about alternate forms of transport. There was a quick mention of connector services with the railway station, but not much detail on where drop-off zones would be. I don't think there was any detail on bike storage or parking zones, which is going to be vital. I would emphasise that the aged sector perhaps is not the centre core of this strategy, the new strategy of Westfield. There's a lot of U-Butte living attractive areas, that living spaces that they want people simply to go and visit, not necessarily to shop from. But I would remind people that the oldest baby boomers are now 72 and the youngest ones are still only 55. So over the next 15 years, you're going to have that huge mass of people turn over 70. And I'm just uncertain as to how friendly their concept is to that sector. And on that point extending on that point, in most car parks these days, there's not a lot of consideration given to heat in car parks. And shade is probably 5%, I would suggest, at Marion. They're talking about taking out some 8 significant trees, I believe, from their report. So again, I think imagination. There's a part of Westfield on the upper level at the moment where they very smartly, excuse the pun, put solar power attractors as shelters too, a dual purpose, to cast shade over quite a large number of parks and at the same time alternative energy yield. So I think there's a few general strategic points there that I would like to have put in front of the set people.
Very good. And Councillor Prosser. Short of winning an architectural prize, if anyone wants to take that up. Yeah, even if it's just WES, probably do it. Very well, we therefore have a motion, so just remind members, we're noting the report, we're endorsing a representation to the SCAP, the assessment panel, we're adding those points which have been put up on the screen, but we're not including the confidentiality provision that was originally entailed. So would someone like to move that? Councillor Schilling, did you wish to speak any further? Councillor Hutchinson seconded, nothing further. Anyone against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So we can move on. You didn't vote. Well, you are required to vote, Councillor Hull. I beg your pardon. I saw a sea of hands go up, but I didn't notice yours against. So I'll put the vote again to be clear. All those in favour? All those against? That is carried by majority. So staff can tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm going through a few of these cover reports. Oakland's railway station renaming. So page 43 of the report. Now, our friends from the Department of Transport, Mr. Watt and Ms. Cookaroo, are here to answer any questions. I have some suggested wording which regrettably I haven't given to staff until now. Just a bit of background, especially for new members. So because of a number of community anecdotes about people unfamiliar with the area wanting to visit Westfield Marion, or hearing that the swimming centre or something that was at Marion, they would get off at the Marion railway station and find they had a very long way to walk to get their destination. And therefore, I suggested and council endorsed the notion of Marion railway station being renamed as Oakland's railway station being renamed Marion. Now, the Department of Transport has clearly come part of the way and suggested that it be called Marion Central, and I can live with that because it conveys that idea of being near the Marion Shopping Centre. I've suggested some additional wording, and sorry, I can't read it out now, but it's to the effect that the current Marion station be the subject of consultation. Councillors will recall that when we wrote to the Minister for Transport earlier, we might have been in this capacity as Minister for Planning, who does names and things like that, but we suggested in the motion that the current Marion be renamed Westminster, because it's a well-known landmark. In fact, the Westminster sign at Marion Station is bigger than the Marion Railway Station sign. But in the because of the suggestion in the debate that Oakland's Estate would be a suitable name for that railway station, in the letter that I wrote to the Minister, we included that suggestion. The Minister or the Department don't seem to have really grappled with that particular aspect of it. So it would, I feel we owe it to our community to avoid confusion about having two Marians, to actually look at the current Marian at the same time as the current Oaklands. However, it is up to councillors whether they wish to move a motion as to numbers, just number one, which is following on from the DIPT communication that you see in the report, or one and two, or whether you want to move that additional three and four, entirely up to you. It's in Warrakowie Ward. Councillor Hull.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You're quite right. Both stations are in the Premier Ward of the City of Marion. You can't change the name of one without looking at the other. And I do welcome the change of mood from DIPTI in regards to changing the name of the station. It's taken a little while, but I welcome that. However, the Mayor makes a good point that the other station is called Marion as well. And we're still going to have those interstate guests, or those overseas guests, getting off at Marion, thinking they're there, and sometimes they're directed to our park home pool. And they're wandering the streets at large with their towel. We need to fix that, please. So, I don't think I can draw pictures better, but, if you can just take that on board, and I support this motion, Mr. Mayor. So
moved as 1 to 4 as printed. Councillor Pryor. Seconded. Anyone against? Any? Councillor Blescu?
Brought to my attention, we do have a couple. We've got help from Marino and Marino Rocks, do we? Or, is that an appropriate parallel, or is it a little bit different?
Who are you asking, Councillor Blescu? At large? Well, Councillor Gard, you want to chip into the debate?
Yeah, I've not experienced, I've never become confused myself, but I've not
ever
experienced any others that have got off at the wrong station of the two Marino stations, Rocks and Marino itself, and not to forget that we also have Hallett Cove Station and Hallett Cove Beach. I don't think there's a great deal of difficulty there. I do take the point, I think the exceptional thing is, as Councillor Hull mentioned, that interstate, overseas, or simply people that are not used to Adelaide could easily be confused by the fact that Marion would be the first station that they arrive at, and they're going to Westfield Marion, as it's often marketed. So it's a pity that has to come first when you're coming from the City of Adelaide, where a lot of our visitors might be staying. So that could be a slightly different issue to the one that prevails in our ward.
All right. Councillor...
While I have the floor, just make one more point that I think certainly the name Marion Centre has some symmetry with the fact that there's Noarlunga Centre. So it's a pretty good choice. I actually was thinking Marion City Centre, and then I debated myself out of that for that reason, that Noarlunga Centre is a good parallel.
I'm just checking, was it Marion Centre or Marion Central? Centre. Marion Centre. So you're right. Councillor Crossland. All good. Just in terms of process, one question for our friends from DIPTI. I understand that just from council writing a letter and making the suggestion that DIPTI thought half of it was a good idea and half of it wasn't. But if we undertake a consultation with the community about the current Marion Railway Station and share those results with the department and the minister, is that the best way to encourage a review of the approach and perhaps reconsideration? Mr. Watt?
Name Marion Railway Station.
and the community owns that. They don't recognize it generally until someone comes along and wants to do something to it. So changing an existing established name can lead to a fairly significant backlash against that change from the community that owns that name.
Well, just what, I suppose what we're trying to convey is people who live in the community is that it's a misleading name to some extent, as it is. And I suppose we would have taken the momentous step of writing to the minister had we not thought that the community would be at least open to considering a name change. In other words, I suppose I'm suggesting we're closer to the action than the department might be, although I can understand the general point that's being made.
To a degree, yes, I don't disagree with that, and I think it's important that if you want to pursue it, you undertake a fairly significant community consultation and be willing to then back up an argument to change the name with a fairly significant majority of community acceptance. Community ownership is a critical thing for place names. In 1918, when we changed German place names, we went back in 1984 and still had people using the old name because they never developed an ownership.
What was wrong with Irish?
It was just one of those xenophobic things of the day. But you have to engender a community ownership of a name change to make it effective. A lot of people may argue that the people that get lost are not the local community, therefore they're not affected by the confusion, but it's the visitors from somewhere else, and why should we change our name to satisfy some visitors to our area?
I just would like to reiterate the point with Marino Rocks and Marino Station, Halicove Beach, Halicove Station, Seaford and Seaford Meadows Station, Gawler Centre and Gawler Central as well. So it is widely accepted on our network that we do have two stations with similar names, and I do agree that it is, it's down to the train network as well, but also the places that people are going to make sure that they market themselves appropriately, especially for international guests, because I know when I travel, I make the effort or I take the time to understand where I need to go and what station I need to get off at. So we do have public service people on our trains who are able to give that assistance. But this consultation period will give us the opportunity to understand what people really want, and hopefully that we do get a lot of people writing in to actually give us that information.
I'm happy to move as is, Your Worship.
And seconded Councillor Crossland. Anyone speaking against? Just before we finish, I would like to express my personal view, and look, I acknowledge that I'm patron of the Sturt Pistol and Shooting Club, but the comment on page 58, council providing funds for the purchase of a firearm is deemed a risk, I think, without clarification, might be taken as a slight by members of the club who are extremely safety conscious and take extremely good care of and control of the firearms that they have about the club. But I'm happy to leave it just as that comment. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that was a against, I think, Councillor Hull? No, look, seriously, Councillor, can you make it clear which way you're voting? I will have the vote again. All those in favour, raise your hand. Right, that is unanimous. Thanks very much. Right, we'll keep moving along. Just knocked over a few pages, that's good. We're on page 68 out of page 514. Now, especially for the new councillors, I'll just explain something about the kindergartens. It's a weird historical anomaly that most of the kindergartens in the area are owned by council. One of the things we explored in the last term was, why doesn't the Department of Education just take them over, just buy them from us, and then they deal with it, they run them the way they want to. But obviously
it suits the Department of Education or the state government to continue the current arrangement whereby they lease them long term off of council. That's the history to it, and so we've got some upgrades to Ascot Park Kindergarten, and therefore we're asked for landlord consent. So with that preface, Councillor Bilescu, moved.
As is, Your Worship.
Any further comments? Sure, just see if there's a seconder. Councillor Clancy, thank you. Did you wish to comment? Thank you. Councillor Holt, question?
Just as an opportunity to indulge, to actually find out whether we've made any headway in getting reasonable rent from this department. It was an issue in the last council term, and the City of West Torrens made a big issue of it, I remember. So is there an update on that?
Through the Chair, I will need to take that on notice. I am aware there have been negotiations and they've been on long-standing, but I'll need to consult with staff to give members a briefing.
That'll go on the log.
Noted. I'll put the motion. Sorry, Councillor Bilescu.
Yeah, just if we can have a comparison also in regards to the capital and maintenance spend undertaken by the department on the property, so we can actually compare it, just so we don't think we're going to get an extra $20,000 in rent and then lose, say, more money in our new obligation to undertake capital works.
Is the questions understood? Right, also noted. I'll put the motion in. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now on page 74, the draft public consultation policy. And again, a bit of background from the Chair. Last term, we worked on a community engagement policy, and we were, I think it was very, very good, very effective. Since then, we've looked at the requirements of the Local Government Act, which has various minimum standards for various obscure types of development or expenditure that we might make. So it was important to incorporate those legal requirements so that staff have that policy in front of them with not just good principles of engagement, but also the legislative minima. And this seems to tick the boxes. So, over to you. Councillor Telfer.
I'll move as per the recommendation. And I'd note that the report says it is the decision of elected members. And importantly, there are many roles in going to the community, informing, consulting, involving, collaborating. But in the end, if elected members can develop a way forward, that is not necessarily what an online survey has returned, so be it. I think it is very easy for the community to think, if we've had an online survey and 20 people go for it and 10 people go against it, that that's where it's at. Not so. There are a whole lot of other environmental factors. It was very hard reading this to work out how to write in that environment, community environment, that sits separate from people responding to online surveys. So in supporting what's here, I'm still mindful that there's a whole environment that's not here.
Thanks, and I would like to add to that. There are three things I can think of where we've actually a good practice established, which wasn't necessarily there 4 years ago. But one is that elected members, if there's a ward issue, will have notice, advance notice of the questions that are going to go out, and they can be improved by elected members. Secondly, the audience, the target audience or the extent of the survey geographically can be discussed with the elected member. And thirdly, I've certainly been pretty strong on this, and I think everyone agrees that there needs to be a hard copy option for community to respond, as well as the Making Marion website. We still have plenty of people out there who don't regularly use computers. So with all of those practices that we have, I think we've improved our community engagement actually quite a bit over the last 4 years. Is that seconded? Councillor Crossland, did you wish to speak?
No, just to say that I like the way it's written in plain English, and I think it helps our community understand it, so I applaud the staff for doing that.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against or question from Councillor Hall?
To take the Westfield approach, wouldn't it be better to put this out now and catch everybody off guard while we're wrapping up their presents and you know, thinking about other things? Seriously, on a serious note, does this new consultation policy or draft consultation policy take on board the recent issues of the City of Marion where we actually picked up on a so-called expressions of interest from a builder to actually go and build a hotel, and we actually then went through a full-blown expression of interest process when Councillor Valescu made the point the other night we should have gone out to consultation first. Does this actually pick that up? Have we actually learnt from that at all? In terms, this is the document that's going to guide us going forward, and I'd like to be assured we won't go down that track again.
Well, it's for elected members to be vigilant if they feel that the public consultation policy is not being adhered to. The council is well aware that it's a contentious point. It's not a foregone conclusion, that which he's putting. And the rhetorical question is, if there was going to be consultation, what would it be consulting on when there wasn't a specific proposal? So all I'm saying is there are two sides to the argument. But if such a proposal was to come up again, it's always open for an elected member to say, this needs to go out for consultation, even if we don't have details, etc., etc. Any other? Well, I'll ask staff if they want to add to that. Ms. Dixon, no? Yes?
Through the chair, it's always open for discussion around the consultation practices that we take.
All right. Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now on to page 85, the Merino Hall, and I know that ward councillors were concerned, and I was concerned too, that the report itself doesn't give us the information we would really need to give administration a direction on which way we want to go. So perhaps I'll just ask for administration to let us know how they've coped with those concerns that have been expressed to them.
Through the chair, so earlier today, following the feedback from the ward councillors, we circulated to council members the usage stats for the Merino Hall and also the types of activities and the frequency as well. So we're hoping that has assisted council in considering this report.
Well, quite frankly, I don't have that detail, and we could say fortunately in one way the recommended motion is just that we note the report and further consider the issue. So in a sense there's no harm passing it, but then what's the point of the report? We can't see how we're advancing the issue. Ms. Dixon, what do you say?
Through the chair, so in terms of the recommendations that staff put together when we were developing the report, we believed council would want to consider the project in more detail through its its four-year business plan process. It will be conducted at next week's forum and then in the January planning session. Should council want to progress this project, it would be a significant project in the next term of council. What we were also thinking after those discussions, apologies, my microphone's dropping out, it would also be important to undertake a further feasibility study. The analysis in this report is based on high-level analysis that was taken through caretaker period and with consultation with the current users of the group and staff from our city activation area going out and analysing the sites and the constraints. To further understand the project, we would recommend that Council undertake a feasibility study where you engage an architect and they also undertake things like review of existing services, soil condition, more detailed analysis of the building condition of the asset, and we would get an independent quantity surveyor as well to understand the costs of whether it's... what we really need to be in a position is to understand the costs and how we make the facility fit for purpose, and then that will inform whether Council wishes to take an option of renewal and upgrade of the existing facility or demolishing and building new.
Sorry, I've just noticed the alternate motion, and members can see that on the screen. I suppose, and sorry, I will hand this over to the ward councillors in a sec, but how can we engage a consultant to undertake a feasibility study if there's no direction about what it might be? Or is the consultant meant to ask the questions and cost a full range of things from a minor renovation through to subdividing the hall into smaller rooms through to a demolishing and rebuilding on one level or two levels? I mean, how does the consultant know which direction to go in? I don't understand.
So through the chair, the consultant would analyse the existing building, the opportunities and constraints with the site, because it is a challenging site, it is a steep slope. So they would look at the feedback that we've got from the current user groups and what they want, how they currently use it, what works for them, what doesn't, and what they want to see in future use of it. And then they would do that analysis, which would inform options and inform high-level costs based on concept designs.
Right, now, and just one more, that we've got an architect on staff, so why the need to go outside the organisation?
Through the chair, you would get an architect to do those concept designs, but they would also be engaging expert consultants to do the structural engineering reports, soil conditions, doing a survey of the services on the site as well. So there is a range of consultants that you would need to engage for that feasibility study. Our approach is usually that we get an external architect to undertake that work and staff are the project officers within the city activation team.
All right. Yeah, sure, Councillor Holt.
The state government money that's been dedicated to that building...
$50,000.
Where's that at, and can we park that to allow us time to adopt either one of those?
It is functions? Being parked to knowing that there's a broader process at work. Ms Dixon?
Through the chair, that is correct, and we've confirmed that with the grant funding body.
Now, I'll to perhaps one of the ward councillors to move a motion of sorts.
Thank you, Your Worship. Staff have assisted with an alternative motion, which should be available to staff to put it on the screen. So at the bottom of the screen. So if I can just indulge particularly the new members. So Marino Community Hall, it's the only community facility in the heart of Marino. It's coming up to 65 years old. We have a engineer's report which says we could extend the life of that hall for another 25 years. But is what alarmed probably the community and ourselves was the cost to get it to that stage is quite a lot of money. It needs to be invested in the hall, a couple of hundred thousand, and that needs to be spent in the next 6-7 years. So rather than keep putting good money after bad, council started considering that facility. July time, we had the opportunity to increase the opportunities of that site because it's quite restrictive at the moment. And a vacant allotment became available directly behind the hall. Council has purchased that land, so we've made significant investment already, and we are currently sitting on that land behind the hall. So What we've been doing in the meantime is looking at opportunities for the site, and we've in August we went to community consultation with the committee only to find out basically the needs and wants of the community there and what the hall is being used for. Why I had concerns is the report doesn't lead us to the next stage. The next stage needs to be, what do we actually need? What are the options? And one of the options will be renovate the existing hall, right through to hopefully an option which may be a new hall. There's a range of options there using both sections of land. The report would just not take us anywhere forward. We've got the 50,000 from the state government at the moment in waiting, and also we've got the opportunity in the future to leverage money from the federal government and maybe both Labor and Liberal candidates. So the idea of getting a little bit more work done on this project is to at least get us to the stage where we can go external for funding, as well as considering the opportunities of the site. I've been advised that this is the best way forward, and the feasibility has to be done by a private consultant. I echo the Mayor's comments that that's not always ideal, investing money in just drawing plans and consultation. But I've gone through it with staff, and I think that is the best way forward.
Was that 3 minutes, was it? Councillor Gard?
Your Worship, if I may second the motion. I'd firstly like to acknowledge the presence in the gallery today of Fran Southern, the chair for the Hall Committee, and her husband Dennis, who have been extremely active and helpful in the overall processes to date, and know the hall, I think, pretty well, every brick and everything else. I do also acknowledge the help given by Councillor Crossland in some of the process. I was a bit of a voice in the wilderness at one point. But I think we're getting consensus now, and I think the stars are beginning to align for the hall at large. There was a very, very well-run brainstorming session last week chaired by Fran Southern at the hall. We came up with some very good stuff which can feed into more public consultation in time. I wanted to also make the point that, and I actually discussed this this morning at Finance and Audit Committee, that the life expectancy of one of our assets is not all about the physical, and that by process we do actually introduce the subject of services and the way that an asset is being operated in order to work out its life. So the 25 and a half years spoken of in relation to the community hall is very theoretical and very much associated with the physical nature of the hall, but it does not serve the purpose that a site like that should be serving and very soon. So I make that point very strongly. And one other thing is that the $50,000 grant, I'm told, needs to be expended by August. So we need to take that into account as well in proceedings. But I really do commend the project. It's exciting. It's something that Marino needs badly for many reasons. One of the greatest reasons originally was the eyesore of the building in an ever-improving community physically. So if I stop there, I think I've said enough. It's a matter now of being concerted in our processes and just trying to meet the needs for business planning, etc.
Right. Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put Councillor Hull. If we're going to pass the motion, there's no need.
I want to give some context to why I'm supporting it.
Well,
I won't take long.
Well, no, sorry, we need to be strict. We need to be strict.
Under the Act, I'm entitled to, you know.
Actually, under our meeting procedures, order, just a sec. I'll seek advice from manager governments. We've had a mover and seconder. Someone else wants to speak in favour. Our meeting procedures say that we don't do that. What is the case?
Through the chair, yes, the meeting procedure says that we will ask for someone to speak against, and then we will proceed for and against until the debate has been exhausted, unless leave of the meeting is granted by the chair.
And what does the Act say?
The Act doesn't specify. The Act requires that you define it within your code of practice for your meeting procedures.
So as an elected member, you're entitled to speak to any motion.
That's obviously well. I'm happy to take the advice of the manager governance. This council has agreed to certain meeting procedures, so we'll stick to them. We would be here all night if everyone wanted to express their opinion about every motion. What we're here about is not necessarily staking out our own positions, but getting to outcomes, making decisions. So I'll put the motion, there having been no speaker against. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Next, we have on page 93 the Equity, Access and Social Inclusion Draft Policy. There are certainly some things I don't understand in that, and so it may not be as straightforward as it might appear. Given the time, unless there's, it says that we have to have this policy in place by 2020, is it possible to come back to another meeting?
It is possible to defer it should council want to discuss it further.
Right. Well, it's up to you, members. It's a very important issue, but it's also important to get the wording right. People happy to defer it? Councillor Valesky? I just adjourn it to the February meeting? Oh, there are two, aren't there? Adjourn it to the first meeting in February? If we need to discuss it at a forum in between, we can. Seconded by Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So we're certainly not running away from an important issue, but just I think we all need to have a careful look at the wording there. Next one, I think, is page 102, Morfordville Park Sports Club Road Closure. Now, as I read the report here, it says there was no community response. Like, there's SA Power Network's response, but I can't see any community response at all. Is that the case?
So, the Chair, that is correct.
Wow. Well, you know you're not causing too much of a problem when you get zero response. So I'll just leave it to someone to move the motion. Councillor Bolescu?
Question, there was no letters received. Any letters received in regards to the issue?
Through the Chair, not that I'm aware of, and I'm just seeking clarification from Project Officer Carla. So.
Thank you.
So you want to move, Councillor?
This is just closing the road and going through the processes as part of the redevelopment that Council agreed to at the end of the last term.
And is that seconded? Councillor Clancy, do you wish to speak? Anyone in opposition? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thanks very much. So go to the next item. Streetscape Project Warrakowie Way. The words in the executive summary, development on Diagonal Road, are probably clearer than they might have been had the Westfield item not come up. Probably would have sent some hairs running. But given that there's this proposed Westfield development, does it make sense to defer decisions about Warrakowie Way until we know what they're doing? Councillor Pryor, over to you.
I'm happy to defer this as well.
I think there is some pretty key items along Westfield, about Westfield's development. Can I ask a question as well?
Of course.
Yeah, the question is about where the priorities come from. I mean, the alternate priority was Sturt Road, I believe. But, I mean, in our possible programs, I don't know, maybe I'm missing something, but I can't see Sturt Road on there.
I'll ask Mr. Lyons to answer that, but especially for the benefit of new members. One of the things we did with a whole range of things, whether it be playgrounds, reserves, streetscape projects, was to develop a matrix of criteria and then, using the ward briefings in some cases, apply a whole range of projects. Staff applied the criteria to that whole range of projects and we came up with an order. So in a number of these areas, we've actually got a whole series of projects mapped out. The trouble is that things do change. So, in fact, I mean, like the Westfield development. So the question is, where do we go if there's a reason to delay a particular item? Alawuna Avenue was another one where there are likely to be changes as a result of the Minister's development plan amendment in relation to the Tonsley site. So it's better to know what that is before we do that one. But I'll ask Mr. Lyons to answer why did Sturt Road come up rather than any of the others.
Through the Chair and Councillor Pryor, there are two matters here and you pick them up. The first is the deferral of Warakawi, and I think that makes sense. We probably all agree with that. There's other things afoot there and it would be nice just to put that on the back burner for a little while. Sturt Road, you are correct, it wasn't on the list. In hindsight, you know, I'd love to think it could have been, but really it's 100% opportunistic in that DIPTI in 2019 will be doing half of Sturt Road, so from south down to Bradley, and including the Birch area there, which we're also tying in with some streetscaping. We've seen their plans. They look really impressive. New median works, new footpath works, new cycle and walking areas, new planting, but they're going to do half of it. And I would love to extend that from where they're leaving off all the way through to Marion Road.
Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about in the past creating a network, rather than just picking one street here and one street there, creating a network of places and places that people would want to go. So I don't think that's inconsistent with the South Road precinct. So I'm kind of happy with that. But the question is, have we looked at going further up to Marion Shopping Centre?
I'd love to, but I'm constrained by the budget that we have allocated to Warakawi, both for design and construct. And what I'd love to do also is get back with members perhaps in the first half of 2019 in a forum to re-look perhaps at our priorities on the streetscaping and talk about arterial roads as well. A lot of the streets that we identified based on ward areas and equalising the roads around the wards. Some of them ended up being secondary, tertiary, even lower roads. But I'd love to have a rethink about what roads we are prioritising.
That when I first saw the mention of Sturt Road, my immediate question is, great, why can't we go from South Road down to Morfitt Road and have probably the busiest patch and the most important commercially patch on the southern side of Westfield being upgraded? It's not on our plan at all. So I'm comfortable with this because I can those reasons seem to be pretty compelling rather than have a patch of good, then a patch of undone, then a patch of good next to it. We've got some questions, I think, before we get into the motion. I'll come back to Councillor Pryor for the motion, but Councillor Hull? I beg your pardon. Councillor Pryor did move the motion, and you're seconding Councillor Hull. Okay.
In our ward with the Warakawi Way. Well, I think there's good reason for that. The Westfield proposal is one. The other thing that we had, it was interesting that a little while back when there was going to be a possible hotel on the site, that road was going to get consumed altogether. That was part of the brief. And it still should be part of our brief, but not for a hotel, but in terms of no vehicular traffic through there, particularly buses. I think, and I urge the CEO to have ongoing dialogue with the ward councillors about this, but in particular the access and egress to Westfield. We should have staked our claim quite a long time ago and draw the line in the sand what is going to be acceptable. Of course, cars going backwards and forwards past through the middle of our hub, our domain, is unacceptable. And we should have actually stuck to our guns before when we had legal advice that advised us that we should have closed that road.
Order, I just want to make sure that you're not getting into confidential territory, Councillor Holt.
Well,
I don't know.
No, well, we were told many years ago, you know, three or four terms back, that we should have actually closed that road off and demonstrated to Westfield that's a no-go zone to have cars going backwards and forwards into their property because of what our hopes and aspirations are with that precinct. So I think it's urgent. I think it's really, it always has been urgent, but I just implore the CEO to take this on board as an urgent item in this area because it will underpin what will happen with Waratahi Way into the future. But the explanation given by Mr. Lyons about Sturt Road, I accept. Opportunities bob up. I totally get that. And we need to actually embrace those and value add them, because that's what you're suggesting we do. So Councillor Pryor made a good point that it was on our projections, but things come up and we should react to that. We should be a responsive council when these sort of opportunities arise. It's not in my ward, but I support it because I think it's a good idea. But with Waratahi Way, please start taking this area very seriously about access and egress in particular, for Westfield and for buses and all that. We need to get the local member involved in that as well.
I'll just mention that, you know, when you look at that list on page 111, we're actually working pretty consistently through the top of that list. So Alawuna, there was a reason to defer. Finner Street's done. Railway Terrace is going to be done, subject to the Greenway going through. Heron Way on the way. Birch Crescent on the way. Waratahi Way, we're just saying we might defer. Bray Street, another quite significant street. I would say after that, you actually start getting into a few questionable ones. Not all of them, but some of them. And I guess it's easy for me to say as Mayor, I wish we didn't have a ward filter on those roads, so that we said, oh, well, everyone has to have, you know, two streets on the list. Well, the fact is not all wards are the same. Some are more central, some have more arterial roads than others. But anyway, that's for councillors to decide. Now, there might be... Are these questions, Councillor Crossland?
My question was, look, I'm in favour of the busier main roads. That was always the idea. But I just question, is this road actually a council road, or is it a Dipti road that we're... Because I thought Sturt Road was a major arterial and under Dipti's repair, management and fixing.
Yeah, Mr. Lyon.
It is a Dipti road, that's correct. But we would take on what's behind the curb and do all the planting and the median strip effects to reflect what Dipti are doing down with their in-scope work as part of the Darlington upgrade.
Just to confirm ownership then on the, let's say, the housing side of the curb, is that ours or Dipti's?
I don't like to use the word ownership. I prefer to have Mr. Allen advise me on that. But responsibility, we can do behind the curb. We can plant, we can landscape. That's our responsibility.
Okay, no, sorry, because it's probably part of the road reserve as such. So responsibility is a better word. Thank you. Councillor Gard, you had a question?
One with Alawuna. Perhaps the answer might be to put the actual year rather than the from now on, because the years are going by. I think year one, is it right to say, is 2018, or was it 2017? So just from the point of view of perspective, the other thing is, if we do that with Sturt Road, at that end, is there a case for bringing Sturt Road further westwards in segments into this list to match up. I mean, there's a rationale also associated with the city activation around the Westfield Marion area.
Well, Mr. Lyons was saying that he wants to come back next year and have another discussion about that, arterial roads in particular, to see if there's any stomach. New council, yeah. We might want to take, you know, just adjust the dial to some extent.
In particular, though, I just want to emphasise Sturt Road because of what we are about to do. Yeah.
Rightio. Another question, Councillor Crossland?
Yeah, just worded the same. So I think I'm saying the same thing, but would there be any scope or would it save council money to consider doing the whole of Sturt Road at the same time, and would you be able to bring that type of cost back to council to consider? So it might be $500,000 if we do it now at the same time, or $800,000 if we do it as a separate project.
Might have an off-the-cuff answer for us, Mr. Lyon.
I like the thinking, and there's always efficiencies to be gained through that. I do have some constraints. One is the capital and design budget for this year and next year, and we've already committed a lot of next year's design and construction budget. So if we were to do Sturt, and I love that idea, I would need to get extra budget to be able to do that next year. So my preference is to design Sturt that length this year, construct the next length next year, and then at the forum conceivably do, you know, follow into the next year after that.
So there's no urgency. In a sense, they're busy enough. Is there anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. Right, now the Tonsley Greenway. And interesting to...
Sorry, is it?
No. Whoa. Cove Sports Oval noting. Didn't mean to neglect Cove Sports Oval. This is another one of those matters where we had, in good faith, sought some state funding. It wasn't forthcoming, so now we have to reconsider. And in a number of these cases, clubs have been waiting a long time, even years, for whether it be lights or some other infrastructure, and this is one of them. It does cause grumbles at the local level. And now that we've sort of determined we're not getting that state assistance, we have to bite the bullet and either tell them that they're not going to get the service they want or to spend the extra money. Councillor Crossland.
May I ask a question first before moving the motion as written? Thank you. Just one thing that concerns me, because it's come up before when we've considered other infrastructure needs. It says in the report that these lights are now at the end of their useful life and need to be replaced. Under our maintenance programme, I actually thought that became a council responsibility, so realistically, why are we actually considering it in this way if it's legally our responsibility as a landlord?
Through the Chair, Councillor Crosland is correct. Under the lease, the replacement of the light, the infrastructure, the tower and the lights is a responsibility for Council. It's capital renewal. We did seek grant funding this year and was unsuccessful to offset the costs. It's not factored, and we were hoping to receive that and progress with that. It's not factored into the current capital works program, and there isn't sufficient resources funding available to cover it, so we're seeking some further money be allocated, because as the report indicates, they have reached the end of their useful life and do need to be replaced.
Councillor Crossland.
I mean, thank you. Look, I'm happy to move it this way, but it seems to be we're sort of robbing Peter to pay Paul, but the end result's going to be the same. We need to fix the lights, whether it comes from asset renewal or, by the looks of it, coming from the CFPP fund. We really don't have a lot of choice. And although we tried to get external funding, which would have been fantastic, it's not happened, and we keep going for the grant, but it's just not working out for this club.
So a bit more. Through the Chair, you raised some excellent points, Councillor Crosland, and the discussion we've had in the city property areas. We need a forward plan for this capital renewal in our facilities, and if we're, you know, taking an opportunity to apply for grant funding, we should also plan for worst case scenario and build that into the budget should we be not successful.
before the motion's moved, did you have a question, Councillor Guard?
I just wondered if there's any possibility, if we need a case, we probably don't need a business case if it's something we have to do, but if we want to prove the worthiness of the expenditure, to determine or estimate the amount of wear and tear we would have to address, because it's mentioned in this report that if the lighting falls short of the area it's needed over, then there's going to be more wear and tear on the area that can be used. So through the Chair, I just ask that one.
Through the Chair, that is a key consideration why the lights need to be replaced, but they also have reached the end of their asset life and are at risk, if they're not replaced, of asset failure as well. So, and the reason we brought it to Council was there was a resolution that outlined the budget for this, so we thought for transparency we should bring it back to Council, but I do take Councillor Crosland's point that we should plan for that should we not get grant funding when it is our responsibility.
Yeah, look, the fact is there's a dark patch on the oval, apart from anything else, has been for years, talked about for years, replacing these lights. Now we've got this evaluation that they're at the end of their useful life as well. Councillor Pfeiffer, question?
Yeah, look, it's only just occurred to me whilst rereading this now. These aren't the lights that we replaced about 5 years ago after the towers fell over, are they? That was the football lights, wasn't it?
This is for football, isn't it?
This is for football.
Yeah. Sorry. Footy. Yeah. So, Councillor Pfeiffer, just clarifying your question.
Sorry, I thought
through the Chair, there.
That's unfortunate. What do we do with used poles, by the way? Sort of half a tonne of metal. Fair enough. Now, we're ready, I think, for a motion, Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'll move the motion as printed, recommended by staff.
And any further?
Oh, look, I think I've said most of it. Look, we're duty bound to do this anyway as part of their lease agreement. I think whether it comes from the Community Facilities Partnership Programme funding or just the Asset Sustainability Reserve, which is slightly separate, it's all the same pot, so we'll just leave it as is.
Seconded. Councillor Duncan? Wish to say anything? Anyone against? Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I just got a quick question. The cost of replacing light for light with metal halides, I'm not for this, but I just want to know what it is.
Yeah, through the Chair, if you were going to replace light for light, metal halide for metal halide, so this would be around about $90,000 for a football oval. We did Morfordville Park last year. That came in at around about $85,000. Metal LEDs are usually around about twice the price.
So we'll be talking 65 because we've already got one light done?
We had one light done, however we need to replace that light. We're replacing the metal halide lights with LED lights, so as such all four including...
I've got a question fully supportive of this. What's the difference in electricity costs between the two? So do we have any idea how much the clubs will be saving?
Yeah, through the Chair, around about 30 to 40% savings on electricity usages, plus as well the life cycle of LED compared to metal halide. Metal halides are around about 3 to 4, LEDs are around about 7 to 9.
And we've got, just to follow that on, in dollar figures, do we know what the, can we isolate what the electricity bill would be for the oval light?
Through the Chair, not really. All the different clubs have different usages and so forth. If you're trying to compare Cove with, say, like Plimpton, that has three times...